Hare Krishna.
So welcome to our Saturday Bhagavad Gita
verse of the second chapter. We have finished the first chapter and the first 30 verses of the second chapter thus far in our Saturday programs. Let us briefly therefore recapitulate the structure of the second chapter, and we will briefly discuss what we spoke about last Saturday. For those of you who are more academically inclined and more serious of studying the Gita very deeply, some little interesting details are important for our study. In the first three verses of the second chapter, Lord Krishna scolds or reprimands Arjuna for his weakness and urges him to not give way to such weakness. Thereafter, from text 4 to 9, Arjuna continues talking from where he left off in the first chapter, giving further reasons why he does not wish to fight. But ultimately, then he surrenders to Lord Krishna and accepts him as his spiritual master. From text 10 to 30, which we concluded last time, Lord Krishna begins his instructions, his reply to Arjuna's various points, and gives a philosophy of Sankhya Yoga, which means the philosophy of differentiating between matter and spirit, the soul and the body, between the temporary and the eternal, and so on. In this section on Sankhya Yoga, Lord Krishna had outlined the various qualities of the Atma, the difference between the qualities of the soul and the body, how the soul is eternal, the body is temporary, and how the soul moves from body to body. And now in this section, section 31 to 39, basically Lord Krishna is going to try to convince Arjuna to fight on the grounds of his being a Kshatriya. Now, Arjuna had given so many reasons for his not wanting to fight. We have discussed these earlier. And Lord Krishna is giving again, point by point, his various arguments to convince Arjuna that he should fight. So we saw till last time, four arguments. Does anyone remember any of the arguments that Lord Krishna gave? We discussed this last time. What were the four arguments given by Lord Krishna to Arjuna, which we discussed last Saturday? Arjuna is saying, I don't want to fight. Krishna is saying, you must fight. So what are the four reasons that Krishna gave last time? No? Okay, first reason is that all living beings are the eternal spirit soul, the Atma. And therefore, when Arjuna kills his worshipable superiors like Drona, Bhishma on the battlefield, he is not killing them. He is just destroying the bodies. But the eternal soul can never be slain. So in one sense, he is never really killing at all, because the body is always dead and the Atma is always alive. The body was never alive and the body can never be alive. The body is always dead only because of the presence of the soul it appears to be alive. On the other hand, the Atma is eternal, always alive. So you can never kill something that is eternal. And where is the question of killing something that is not alive, which is the body? So therefore, you don't kill anything, my dear Arjuna, because the soul is eternal and the body is already dead, so no question of killing the body. So this is the first argument that Lord Krishna gives. The second argument that Lord Krishna gives in text 26 is that even if you don't believe that there is a soul, or if you believe that the soul is born with the body and it dies with death, still there is no cause for lamentation, because after all, if the soul or the body is simply a lump of chemicals, which is what many philosophers and scientists today say, then why should you lament for the loss of a bunch of chemicals? When your relative dies away, why do you wail and weep if only some chemicals have gone away? The chemicals are still there. The third argument that Lord Krishna gives in text 27, where he says, Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityu dhruvam janmam gatasya cha, that for everyone that is born, death is certain. For all who are dead, birth is certain. So Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that because every living being is destined to die, do not think that by your not fighting this battle, Drona and Bhishma are not going to die. They are going to die anyway, whether you fight or not. So might as well you fight. And then if they die at your hands, that is according to the laws of destiny. So do not think that by avoiding the battle, they will not die. Then in text 28, Lord Krishna offers the fourth reason, where he says that everything in this creation is unmanifest in the beginning and in the end. It is only manifest for a short while in the middle. We gave the example last time of whether it's a skyscraper or a mountain or the universe or this microphone or our bodies. In the beginning, it did not exist in this form or in this form or in this form. It existed in the elemental form, in the form of elements, like iron or steel or iron ore, whatever it may be. Soon it was fashioned into this form. One day it will be destroyed. It will return to its form in basic elements. So therefore, there is no loss. It makes no material difference that in the middle, for some time, something becomes manifest. So if you believe there is no soul and the body is manifest for some time, it is unmanifest afterwards and before, then why lament? In any case, there is no loss. So this is the fourth argument that Lord Krishna gives. And having spoken thus, in conclusion, then in verse 29 and 30, Lord Krishna brings back the subject of the soul. He speaks the famous, what verse? Amazing verse, in which Lord Krishna explains that those who see the verse, those who see the soul, who speak about the soul and hear about the soul, are amazing. The soul itself is amazing to be seen, to be heard, to be talked about. And whoever sees or talks about or hears about the soul does so in great amazement. So we saw a discussion on this subject last time. And then finally in text 30, Lord Krishna concludes his discussion on the soul by emphasizing once again that the soul is eternal, the body is perishable, and therefore Arjuna must not hesitate to fight. Now, in the following verses that we are going to start discussing today, Krishna will be attacking another point made by Arjuna, which is that he feared that whether he won or lost the battle, he would not be able to enjoy the opulences of the kingdom after that. If he lost the battle, he would be dead. If he won the battle, there would be so much sorrow that all his loved ones, his dear ones, were dead. He would never be able to enjoy the kingdom. So Arjuna was thinking from the point of view of his own pleasure and his own enjoyment. Therefore, Lord Krishna wishes to correct him now. This mentality is a very common mentality. We all like to do certain things which we feel will give us pleasure, and we like to avoid those things which we feel will bring us some pain or some distress. But Lord Krishna brings us to a higher standpoint. He says, don't worry about your pleasure and pain. So now Lord Krishna is going to talk about performance of Arjuna's duty as a Kshatriya, and that as a Kshatriya he mustn't consider his pain and pleasure, rather he must consider that as a Kshatriya it is his duty to fight. Having spoken Sankhya Yoga, given the Jnana or the knowledge of the soul, spiritual wisdom, now Lord Krishna will come to a slightly lower platform, where he will speak of performance of duty in this world, and he will be offering certain material benefits to Arjuna, that if you do this, this will be the benefit, if you do that, this will be the loss, if you don't do your duty, this will happen. So Lord Krishna is going to address Arjuna's concern from all angles of vision. So from text 31 to 39, this is going to be the discussion. Krishna trying to urge Arjuna to fight as a Kshatriya. In text 31 and 32, he will be urging him because of the benefits that will come of fighting. And text 33 to 37, he will be pointing out the loss that he will incur if he does not fight. So let us begin with text 31. So kindly repeat after me. Swadharmam api chaveksha na vikampitumarhasi dharmyadhi yuddhashreyonyat kshatriyasya na vidyate. Translation by Srila Prabhupada: considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles. And so there is no need for hesitation. So Lord Krishna is speaking here about Swadharma. Swadharma, one's own occupational duty. The word dharma is a very deep word, but we are just loosely in ordinary language explaining it as occupational duty. But occupational duty in terms of what? Somebody says my occupational duty may be this or that, so that has to be seen according to what is called the Varnashram Dharma, where we have Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, which are the four Varnas, and the four ashramas, which are Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So one must perform one's prescribed duty according to one's position in the Varna and the ashram. If one is a Grihastha or a householder, one has certain kinds of duties to perform. Or if one is a Kshatriya or a Vaishya by propensity, by profession, then one should perform activities that are prescribed for such a Varna. So, Arjuna's Swadharma is to be a Kshatriya. He has Kshatriya blood flowing through his veins. His propensity is to fight and be a warrior. So he should not neglect the performance of his duties. Rather, he should perform it on for religious principles. So therefore, dharmya bhi yuddha shreyo anyaha. For dharma, for the sake of religious principles, you should perform your swadharma. This is very, very important. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, also Lord Krishna explains, Shreyan swadharma vigunaha paradharmat panushtitat. He says, swadharma, better to perform, shreyaha, it is better to perform your own duty than to perform svanishthitat very expertly paradharma, somebody else's dharma. If you are a Kshatriya by nature and you artificially try to be a Brahmana, even if you are able to do the Brahmanical activities very nicely, but your propensity is that of a Kshatriya, then that is not good. On the contrary, as a Brahmana, for example, even if you are imperfectly doing your duty, better to do that imperfectly than to do another's duty perfectly. So therefore Lord Krishna explains, svabhavaniyatam karma kurvan naapnoti kildisham. He says, even if your performance of prescribed duties is tainted by some fault, you are not able to perform it perfectly, still you must do it. It is better to perform your own duty, even though done imperfectly, than to perform another's duty perfectly. And to elaborate this further, Lord Krishna gives a very nice example of fire and smoke in the 18th chapter, where he says, Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham apnityajet sarvarambahi doshena dhuminagnir ivavritaha. He says, just as fire is covered by smoke, dhuma agnihi, dhuma means smoke, agni is fire, iva avritaha, covered. So just as fire is covered by smoke, all our activities in this world are covered by some fault. Can anyone in this world say that his or her activities are not covered by fault? There is always some fault in our activities that we do in daily life, whether as a Brahman or as a Kshatriya or anything. So therefore, one does not stop taking advantage of the fire because there is smoke. With fire you can cook, you can warm yourself, you can do so many things. Do you say, well, fire has such a bad byproduct, the smoke, so because there is smoke, I will freeze to death, I will not use the fire? Do you say that? No. There may be some bad byproduct, which is a smoke, but still I will make use of the fire. So similarly, my propensity, if that is to act as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya, then I must do that, regardless of the fact that in pursuance of my activities there will be some fault. But better to do that than to perform another's duty. So here in this verse too, Lord Krishna is explaining, dharmyat di yuddha shreyo anyaha. It is better to perform your own duty on religious principles than to avoid your duty altogether. And as a Kshatriya, your duty is to fight. So therefore, you fight. So, performance of religious duties for God, for the pleasure of God, is called Karma Yoga. Yajnarthat armano karmano anyatra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangaha samachara. In the third chapter, Lord Krishna explains, one should perform all our activities for the pleasure of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. We should not perform them for our own satisfaction or pleasure. And when we do that, then such work becomes a worship. It becomes the cause of our liberation from bondage. But when we work for our own selfish interest, then that work becomes a cause of our bondage. And in order to accept the fruits of our karma, we have to take birth again and again and again. So Lord Krishna is emphasizing here that one should not give up one's occupational duties due to the difficulties that are there in that. For example, if a housewife says, well, so much difficulty for cooking in summer, so I will stop cooking. No. Or if the businessman says, the whole market is down, I will give up my business and go to the Himalaya. So difficulties will come everywhere. If the housewife thinks that, well, at least my husband is in better position, better I go and do business, at least it's better. So she will find when she goes there that there are new troubles there that she did not have here. So in order to avoid the difficulties in the performance of her dharma, she tries to do somebody else's dharma and finds there are other difficulties there. So one cannot escape the difficulties. Similarly, if the businessman tries to stop doing his business and goes into the kitchen and says, now I will only cook, and sends his wife out to do the business, then he will find that in cooking there are so many difficulties that he never experienced before. So in this way, because there are some difficulties in the execution of our own dharma, we should not try to escape from those difficulties and take refuge in another's dharma or another's duties. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, after he took sannyas, he happened to come to Kurmasthan, which is a very famous place of pilgrimage in South India, where there is a very famous deity of Kurmadev, who is one of the incarnations of the Lord. And this Kurma Brahman became very fond of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He became very influenced by him. And all the time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Kurmasthan chanting Harinam Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name, all the time this Kurma Brahman accompanied him and he got the association of Mahaprabhu. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to depart from there, this Kurma Brahman could not bear separation. He said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Householder life is fraught with so many difficulties and miseries. I think everyone is experiencing that. Household life is full of so many problems and tensions and agonies and anxieties and problems. And as Kali Yuga goes, things will become so bad that the Bhagavatam says that the population of this world will want to take to householder life because of uncontrolled senses, but there will be so much anxiety and unhappiness in householder life that they will run away from their homes and go into the Himalayas or run into the forest. They will be willing to accept the austerities of eating the roots and berries even if they are not available every day in the forest, rather than accepting the miseries of staying at home. This is going to be the situation." So the Kurma Brahman also must have had some family problems. So he was saying, he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I am frustrated with my family life. Material life is full of so many difficulties. So I just want to come with you. I will travel wherever you go. Wherever you take me, I will make no demands on you. I will live as simply as you live as a sannyasi. I will be your servant and I'll live. Please allow me to come with you and travel all over the tirthas, the holy places." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "No. You should stay on and do your duty. Look after your family, but do it in a spirit of devotion to the Lord. Hear and chant about the Lord always." And then he gave him a very famous instruction. "Jare dekho tare kaho Krishna upadesh, amar ajnay guru hona taro edesh." He said, "You stay at home, practice Krishna bhakti, and whoever you meet, you tell them about Lord Krishna. In this way, you act as a guru and deliver this whole land of Bharatvarsha. That is the duty of everyone who is born in this land, to take this process of Krishna bhakti very seriously and to spread the message by speaking to everyone we meet about this message. So when we meet our relatives and our friends, we should talk about spiritual subjects as far as is possible. And certainly when we come amongst devotees, we should talk only about spiritual matters, only about things connected to the progress in devotional life." So in this way, in the Bhagavatam also, there are so many instructions. Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanti eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam sthane sthita shutigatam tanuvan nanobhir ye prayaso chita chita pyasita istrilokyam. This is a very famous prayer of Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna, wherein Lord Brahma says that, "My dear Lord, if one does only three things, then one can definitely conquer you who are unconquerable." Lord Krishna is called Ajit. Ajit means one who cannot be defeated. But Brahma says, although the most powerful weapons and the greatest personalities in creation cannot defeat you by their might, by their intelligence, by their knowledge, by their wisdom, but there is one way to defeat you, and that is by following these three principles. What is that? Jnane prayasam udapasya, giving up the path of mental speculation, giving up the path of trying to think, "Oh, God can be like this, God may be like that," concocting our own theories. No, we should just accept the words of the Shastra and the great devotees of the Lord coming in parampara. Second, jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam. We should always hear about the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees. We should regularly come to satsang as much as possible and hear and chant about the Lord. Second, and third, sthane sthita shruti gatam tanuvan manope. We should stay in our position. We should stay in our position and shruti gatam tanuvan manope, with our heart, with our mind, with our words, with our action, we should try to serve Lord Krishna. Wherever we are in that position, no need to make artificial renunciation. Artificial renunciation done out of frustration can lead to what is called Markat Vairagya. Markat means a monkey. If you look at a monkey, it appears very detached, very austere life. No clothes, living on the trees, eating only roots and berries, braving the cold and the heat and the winter and the rain. So many times ascetics live in the forest like that. But the monkey is already naturally living like that. So does it mean that the monkey is a great renunciant? There is no greater enjoyer of worldly pleasures than the monkey. The monkey is constantly engaged in sense gratification. Constantly. So therefore, Markat Vairagya means premature or artificially giving up one's dharma and trying to, out of frustration, take to a position where one is not suited. So in this way, Brahma is saying, by following this very simple formula, one can conquer Krishna, who is Ajit. So here Krishna is repeating a similar point. Arjuna, you are by nature a Kshatriya. Kshatriya blood is flowing in your veins. If you artificially try to become a mendicant by going to the Himalayas out of fear of the consequences of the battle, then you are going to suffer even more. So in order to avoid certain miseries, you want to avoid fighting. But let me tell you, there are much greater miseries awaiting you if you don't fight. So better perform your dharma here and now. You see, this propensity, this dharma, is a very important thing. Guna. It is called guna karma. Chatur varne maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashah. We are all born with a certain nature. Somebody is born with the nature of a Brahmin, somebody with the nature of a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, etc. Of course, nowadays these things are all mixed up and muddled. In the age of Kali, everything is mixed up. But nevertheless, this is an eternal classification of human society because it is made by Lord Krishna himself. Maya Srishtam, it is my creation. Lord Krishna's creation cannot be imperfect. It cannot be defective. So this is a natural classification that exists in society. It has not been artificially imposed by some people. Therefore, this Varnashram system is a much misunderstood system nowadays. So just to illustrate the question of how these propensities are different, I want to give you the example of just how about 200 or 300 years ago, in Bengal there was a king called Raja Krishnachandra. And he had a minister who was a Brahmin. And this Brahmin was very wise, very renounced and austere, and he lived outside the kingdom under a tree. He did not even have a house, and he lived with his wife in that very austere condition, eating only what came of the trees and whatever providence provided. Many times the king would offer him, I will give you a salary, I will give you this, or I will give you some nice clothes to wear, etc. He would not. And one day the king could no longer bear to see his minister in that condition. So he came. And then he saw that the minister doesn't even have a house. So he told the minister that let me at least build a cottage for you here under this tree. The minister was a little irritated with this constant reminder by the king. So he told the king, he said, my dear king, please do not constantly speak on this subject. Do not think that I am in any need of anything from you. I do not need anything from you. Because I have no need for anything that you have. On the contrary, you have all the need in the world for the things that I have, because you don't have them. Because you are living in royal opulence, because that is your nature. So the king understood, and he offered his respects to the Brahmana minister and went away. A Kshatriya by nature needs little opulence. He needs little comfort. He needs little, shall we say, some pomp. When he walks around in society, he wants little respect. He wants to have a position. And he would like, a typical Kshatriya mentality would be somebody standing saluting. He likes, this is the nature of a Kshatriya, he likes this kind of mood. So in order to maintain that kind of mood and that position, he needs some wealthy place, he has to have a palace. So the Kshatriyas always had a wealthy situation. Many times people criticize that the Kshatriya kings in the ancient times, why is it that they lived in such great opulence if they were great devotees of the Lord? Why did they not live in very simple surroundings if they were devotees? The answer is, number one, that people require to see a king in that position. They require to see that there is a king who has a certain status. If the prime minister were to walk around like you and me on the road, he would not get the respect that is due to him. People would take him lightly, nobody would listen to him. Prime Minister said something, nobody will care because he's just one of us. But because you see 20 security guards and so many vans and sirens and then so many other things will be going on, everybody, yes, yes, Prime Minister is coming. So certain aura is there about that position. So in order that the public or the praja, the subjects, should follow the Raja or the king, they need to hold the king in a certain respect and awe and reverence. And in order to maintain that position, the king must have wealth, he must have position, and so on and so forth. And secondly, by his very nature, he needs these things. But if someone were to envy the king, why is the king living in such opulence? The answer is because he also performs tasks that make him deserve that opulence. When the time is there, he is willing to go out and give his life for defending the kingdom. He doesn't hesitate at that time. He will be the first to lead this army and fight. So therefore, his first principle is to protect. Kshatrayate iti kshatriyaha. To protect the praja from danger is the first duty of a kshatriya. So when danger befalls the kingdom or the subjects, the kshatriya should be willing to lay down his life even. So those who are envious of the kings having so much opulence, they can have that opulence provided they also do the other duties of a kshatriya. But those duties are very difficult unless one is actually a kshatriya. Because one must have that natural courage. Only a real kshatriya can have the courage to go out in the battle and face the battle. So in other words, Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna, by nature your propensity as a kshatriya is so powerful. Don't try to artificially change it. When you are in the forest, you will not be able to stay as a mendicant. Because a kshatriya is in the mode of passion. Even if you go as a mendicant, you will have to hunt, you will have to do something to keep your senses engaged. Therefore, a kshatriya was taught right from childhood the use of weapons, and he was even taught hunting, not as a sport, but for training him to become strong to kill in case the need arose in the battlefield, so that he should not become a coward when faced with the enemy. Prabhupada explained that even 100, 200 years ago, there were certain kings in Jaipur area who would go out with a sword and personally fight hand to hand with a tiger and then kill the tiger and bring the tiger's skin back. Nowadays, of course, everyone wants to stand at a great distance and shoot with a gun and come away. That is not for a kshatriya. That is not something very brave to do. Hiding behind in a van or a jeep or on top of an elephant, no. Real kshatriya means they would go hand-to-hand combat or at most with one weapon like a knife or a sword and then combat the tiger. This was the kind of training they did. And in order to compensate for them for the kind of risks and troubles that they would have to undergo in performance of their duty, they were given this as a gift. This is their style of living, that you have to exact taxes from the people will come in and offer you respect and so on. So Krishna knew very well the propensity of Arjuna. So he is warning him again and again that do not abandon your duty, which is your natural propensity. Continue to fight. Then in text 32, will you chant after me? Yadrichaya chopapannam svargadvaram apavritam sukhinah kshatriyah partha labhante yuddham idrisham. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O Partha, happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. Svargadvaram apavritam. Now, this is a very special facility given to Kshatriyas, because Kshatriyas have to risk their life in battle. If they die in battle, then automatically they go to Svarga, they go to the heavenly planets. Very special facility given for them. Now, we must remember that Svarga or heaven is not the kingdom of God. We have discussed before also that this material world, there are the hellish planets, there are the middle earthly planets, there is the heavenly planets, and there are planets even higher than the heavenly planets. And all these systems of planets, 14 systems of planets altogether, are within one universe, which is called a Brahmanda, Brahma Anda. And in this way, there are millions and millions of universes, which are only together a small part of the kingdom of God or the spiritual world. So every single universe has heaven. But the kingdom of God is spiritual. Even the heavenly planets are a temporary abode. Not only the people who stay there have a temporary period of residence there, but the planets of heaven, of the heavenly system, are also themselves temporary. They will also be destroyed when this universe is destroyed. So, when Lord Krishna says here that the Kshatriyas who die fighting on the battlefield will ascend to heaven, he doesn't mean that they will ascend to the kingdom of God or to the spiritual world. They will not be liberated from the cycle of birth and death, but they will attain to the higher planets with tremendous facilities for enjoyment. Material enjoyment is available. There is a special heavenly planet meant for such people who die on the battlefield. It may not be the exact planet where Indradev sits and has Nandankanan, his forests, his gardens and so on. But there are special planets of this nature in this universe and in every universe. Now, in the course of performance of duty, if it is according to one's prescribed nature, there is no sin. That is what Lord Krishna has explained repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. But if you perform another's duty and then perform a mistake or a sin, then you are liable for that. The brahmanas have to perform yajna. By performance of yajna, sometimes in the olden days, animals were sacrificed. And the brahmanas had the power at that time to bring the animal back to life. In fact, when the animals were sacrificed in the yajna, the test of whether the yajna was properly performed or not was that the animal could be brought back to life, would get a promotion, and oftentimes the animal would be promoted to the human form of life, or at worst it would get a very fresh, youthful animal body. So the brahmanas of those ages were capable of doing such things. But today the brahmins of Kali Yuga are not capable. They don't have that shakti or that force to do this kind of thing. This purity does not exist today. So in any case, in the earlier days, because the Brahmins would offer animals in sacrifice, there was no sin associated with that killing, because that was their prescribed duty. Therefore, they were able to bring back the animals to life. Similarly, Lord Krishna explains that as a Kshatriya, if he fights in the battle in an authorized way, then there is no sin attached to him. On the contrary, if he wins the battle, he enjoys the kingdom. If he loses the battle, he enjoys the Swarga. Either way, he wins. There is no loss for a Kshatriya who performs his prescribed duty. In the next verse, text 33, please chant after me.
Atha chetvam imam dharmyam sangramam na karishyasi tatah swadharmam kirtim cha hetva papam avapsyasi.
Translation: if, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and thus lose your reputation as a fighter. So in text 31 and 32, Lord Krishna gave Arjuna what benefits would come to him if he fought as a Kshatriya. And now Lord Krishna is beginning to tell him that, look, this is what will happen to you. This is a loss that you will incur if you neglect your prescribed duty of fighting. So what is the first thing he says? First of all, if you do not perform your religious duties, then you will lose your reputation as a fighter. Tatah swadharmam kirtim cha. Kirti, all your glory as a fighter, you will lose. Arjun was very renowned as a warrior. In fact, he had even been able to defeat, or if not defeat, at least to hold in check Lord Shiva himself. We had discussed this many weeks ago, for those of you who attended the first chapter discussions, of how from the Mahabharata we saw that when Arjuna was trying to get the Divya Astras of Indra, he was moving upwards and he was tested by Lord Shiva, who personally appeared before him in disguise. And a very glorious battle took place thereafter. And when Arjuna had seen a wild dog, who was barking fiercely at him for no reason, and Arjuna started wondering, why is this dog barking at me for no fault of mine? So immediately he shot an arrow into the mouth of the dog. But before his arrows could touch the dog, already there was another hunter who had come along. He had shot already 5 arrows into the dog's mouth. Already done. And Arjuna looked around. Who is this person who has interfered with my prey? It was my right to shoot this animal. Who is it who has done this? And he saw a ferocious looking hunter. And then a great argument ensued between them, both insisting that this animal was their rightful prey. And then the matter came to terms that they said, well, then we have to settle with each other. And they started fighting with each other. And they fought on and on. And finally, Lord Shiva destroyed everything that Arjuna had and made his weapons disappear. He made his quiver, which was supposed to be inexhaustible, become exhausted. And he paralyzed Arjuna's arm. So Arjuna could not lift the Gandiva bow also. And Arjuna did not know why he is not able to touch his bow. But Lord Shiva became very pleased by this display of valor by Arjuna, and he awarded him the Pashupata Astra. Similarly, Drona, although he knew that Arjuna would be fighting him and Arjuna would be the cause of his own death, he still blessed him heartily and gave him all kinds of weapons to fight, knowing full well that those weapons would be used against him and Bhishma. Similarly, even his opponents who hated him and envied him, like for example Karna, Duryodhan, they understood the significance of Arjuna's presence in the Pandava army. And so they tried to get Krishna out of the picture because they knew Krishna and Arjuna were inseparable. So Duryodhan tried so many schemes to bribe Krishna to come out of the picture. Duryodhan was successful in enticing Balaram to come out of the picture. Because Balaram had a soft corner for Duryodhan, because Duryodhan was his favorite student in Gada Yudha, in wielding the mace. And just as Arjuna was Drona's favorite student in archery and other weapons. So Balaram said, well, okay, I will not fight on either side, neither for Pandavas nor Kauravas. He said, Duryodhan, you have come to me asking me to fight for you. Now only Krishna left to be tackled. So he went to Krishna. Of course, already he had been to Krishna. But earlier also he had tried to entice Krishna to come by offering him a big feast. And Krishna did not fall for that trap. And he actually spoke very harshly to Duryodhan, because he understood that behind Duryodhan's very sweet words lay a very cunning and deceitful and selfish heart. So Lord Krishna looks at our heart. He doesn't look at external appearances. He doesn't see how nicely or how sweetly we may be talking or doing something. What is more important is what is the devotion with which we are doing these activities. What is the mood with which we are acting? Therefore, Lord Krishna rejected Duryodhan's hospitality. So Duryodhan's logic was that if we get Krishna out of the picture, even though Krishna is not going to fight, if Krishna comes out, Arjuna will come out. If Arjuna is out, then we have won the battle. The only person who can stand between us and victory is Arjuna. So such was the reputation of Arjuna. There are stories and stories like this of how the reputation of Arjuna was so great. So Krishna is telling him here, see, the first thing that will happen, Arjuna, if you do not fight, is that you will lose your reputation as a fighter. Everybody is glorifying you, Arjuna, the great warrior. You are called so many things, Parantapa, subduer of the enemies. You have so many wonderful names by which you are addressed because of your valor. But now, what will people say about you? And in any case, because your duty is to fight as a Kshatriya, it is your religious duty to protect Dharma, and you are neglecting your Dharma, so you will actually incur sins. Now, Arjuna wanted to avoid fighting because he thought by fighting he would be committing sin. But Krishna is telling him the opposite. He is saying if you avoid fighting, you will commit sin. So see what difference there is between our material calculations of what is sin and what is piety and the Lord's conception of it. So therefore in this world there may be so many standards of morality. What is good, what is bad. But we should refer to what Lord Krishna wants. What is Lord Krishna's understanding of what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong? We should follow that. That is our absolute standard of reference. That is all we are concerned with. We are not concerned with what government says, what some politicians say, what is the new law of the land. Yes, for practical purposes, because we are living as citizens of the country, we have to follow every law of the land. And we should do so very scrupulously. But there are many laws of the land which are against our shastras, which we are forced to follow because we are citizens. Otherwise, we will be called criminals. There are many laws, for example, by law, government has opened so many slaughterhouses. By law, the government is sanctioning the killing of the children in the womb, abortion. By law, the government has made available liquor factories, hundreds of thousands of them. It has opened gambling dens and lotteries, which is nothing but gambling. So according to the Shastra, these are to be the very activities that the government is supposed to prohibit, not to encourage. But now we see, even gambling, every state encourages, and every state has its own state lottery. Isn't it? So all the four regulative principles, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, which are supposed to be the four pillars of sinful activity, are all being violated by the state itself, by the government itself, by official policy. So what kind of rules and regulations are these people going to make? How can they possibly create the upliftment of the people at large? It is not possible. So at the same time, because we are living as citizens, we have to follow all these laws. And sometimes there are certain things which permit us to do certain activities in the Shastra, but the law of the land says, no, you can't do it. For example, aggressors should be killed. If someone burns your house, by the Shastra, you have every right to kill him. But if you do that, then you will be arrested by the law of the land today. So we can't do it. So in this way, we are living in very mixed up times. So we have to refer for our own spiritual progress to understand what is right and what is not right by understanding Krishna's wisdom. So Krishna is saying here that Arjuna, you think you are going to commit sin by fighting, but I tell you, you are going to commit sin by not fighting. Just the opposite. So please fight. And Arjuna continues, Lord Krishna continues with this argument in text 34. Kindly chant after me.
Akirtim chapi bhutani kathayishyanti te vyayam sambhavitasya chakirti maranadati richyate.
Translation: people will always speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. He said, your reputation will be finished, and people are simply going to criticize you. You will be dishonored completely. And as a Kshatriya, for you, honor is very, very important. And dishonor is so bad for a Kshatriya to tolerate that he would prefer death to dishonor. This is the Kshatriya's mentality. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that for a Kshatriya to run away from the battlefield is simply unthinkable. So therefore, one of the codes of Kshatriya warfare was that a Kshatriya should never show his back to his enemy. I may have narrated this story to you, but I will repeat it. Just a couple of hundred years ago, in Rajasthan, there was a story, I don't remember the name of the queen and the king, of this king who came back from the battlefield when the war battle was going on. He came back to his fort, his city, and the queen was standing on top of the gate. And she saw that the king was injured on his back. So she said, I cannot allow you in. She was the wife of the king. Which wife would not like the husband to come home alive? But here the queen is not allowing the husband to come inside. Why? She said, you have wounds on your back. That means you have shown your back to the enemy. So either you defeat the enemy and come back here, or come back as your dead body. So then the king got inspiration by this, and he went out and fought and actually came back victorious. So in this way, this is the spirit, the Kshatriya spirit. So even the ladies were so strong at that time that they understood this was a spirit, that a Kshatriya can never show his back. But when Krishna does something like that, if he shows his back on the battlefield and runs away, then Krishna is glorified as Ranchod. One of the names of Krishna is Ranchod. Ranchod. Jo ran chod ke bhaag gaya. One who ran away from the battlefield. So he was criticized like anything. In this world, many times people become very unhappy when they are criticized by others. Isn't it? All of us have experience. Somebody criticizes us and it shoots as if those words were like sharp arrows hitting our heart. And we can't bear it. Oh, such and such person is speaking harsh words about me. It's intolerable. So whatever may be the philosophy behind how to accept such things, at least one thing that we can draw consolation from is that even Lord Krishna is subject to criticism. Even he is not free from being criticized by others. It happened many times in Krishna Leela also. So Krishna wanted to perform his Leela in Dwarka, and he wanted to shift from Mathura to Dwarka, and 17 times he had defeated Jarasandha, and still Jarasandha from Magadha was attacking for the 18th time, and there was another Yavan king called Kala Yavan who also simultaneously attacked. And Krishna and Balaram were thinking that why subject our devotees, residents of Mathura, to all these trials and tribulations? Let us transfer them away to Dwarka. In any case, it is time for our Dwarka Leela. So as they were all asleep in Mathura, by their yogic shakti, mystic power, Krishna transferred all the residents of Mathura to Dwarka. Before that, Vishwakarma had already created the fort of Dwarka in the sea. So in the morning when the residents of Mathura woke up, they found that they were now residents of Dwarka. They were no longer in Mathura. And I heard someone saying that the reason the name of Dwarka came is that they were all woke up in bewilderment and looking. They were asking for the door, Dwarkaha, Dwarkaha, Dwarkaha. So it became Dwarka. They were looking, where is the door? Where are we? Where are we? How is it that we have suddenly appeared here? Where is Mathura? So having safely transferred all his devotees to Dwarka, Krishna Balaram said, now let us have another pastime. Just like people call me thief, Makhan Chor, because I stole butter. Now let them call me some other names also, because I am absolute. Whether names are given to me, criticizing me or appreciating me, they are all appreciating me. So therefore, he ran away from the battlefield. He started walking away, showing his back to Kala Yavan. And Kala Yavan was chasing him and chasing him, running as hard as he could. And of utmost surprise to Kala Yavan, as hard as he may run, even though Krishna was walking very slowly, Kala Yavan was not able to catch up with Krishna. On the contrary, the gap between them was widening. And Kala Yavan was getting frustrated. I'm running so fast with all my might and Krishna is only gently strolling, and I seem to be getting further and further away from Krishna. What is this happening? And in his frustration, Kala Yavan was hurling abuses at Krishna. What kind of kshatriya are you? You are showing your back to your enemy. Come on, if you are such and such, you should come. So in this way, Krishna completely ignored him, as if he did not exist. But in other times, you see, when Krishna was challenged, because he was playing the role of a kshatriya in Mathura and Dwarka, when Paundrak Vasudev, the false Krishna, he challenged Krishna and hurled abuses, Krishna also shouted back. And they spoke to each other harsh words to incite each other's anger to fight. And then they fought and Krishna easily killed Paundrak, who was imitating Krishna by having a peacock feather and Vaijayanti garland and Pitambar, the golden colored dhoti and so on. But this time, Krishna simply ignored this Kala Yavan. And Kala Yavan became even more furious. And anyway, what happened thereafter is a long story. But the point is that Krishna got the appellation of Ranchhor after that. And there is a temple of Ranchhor in a place called Dakor in Gujarat. Have any of you been there? How many of you have been to Dakor? Please raise your hand. Huh? No. Udaipur is Nathdwara. That is different. That is Gopalji. Ranchhorji is in a place called Dakor in South Gujarat. And here the main deity in the temple is Ranchhor. Ranchhor Rai. So just like, you know, in greeting, just like in North India they say Jai Shri Ram or Shri Ram, or in Gujarat many times they say, when they lift the phone, Jai Shri Krishna, or we say Hare Krishna as a greeting. So there, when two residents of the town greet each other, what will they say? One will ask the other, Mandir ma kon che? Who is in the temple? The other will say, Raya Ranchhor che. The great Ranchhor Rai is there. It's a form of greeting. just to say, like we say, hello, how are you, Hare Krishna, or Hari Bol, whatever we may say, it's a form of greeting. So Ranshod is glorified because he ran away from the battlefield. There is no other Kshatriya in history in whose honor a temple has been built because he ran away from the battlefield. But Krishna is the only one. Of course, Krishna is actually speaking neither a Kshatriya nor a Vaishya nor anything. Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has nothing to do with all these designations. When he comes and accepts some role here, he acts. He plays a drama. He acts as a Vaishya, cowherding, taking the cows and the calves out into the forest, playing with the cowherd boys. He plays a drama of being a king, of being a Kshatriya. So actually Krishna is neither this nor that. At the Rajasuya Yajna of Yudhishthira Maharaj, when Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna like anything, he was really criticizing Krishna, and Krishna was patiently hearing all these abuses. And one of the things that Shishupal actually said about Krishna in criticism was that we don't even know if this Krishna is a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. For some years he was cowherding, and now he is taking the role of a king. What is he? Is he Vaishya? Is he Kshatriya? So what Shishupal did not understand was that his criticism was actually a glorification of Krishna. Because yes, Krishna cannot be an ordinary Vaishya or a Kshatriya. Krishna is beyond. So you can't limit Krishna by saying that he is this or he is that. So in any case, but the same is not true with Arjuna. Arjuna is not Krishna. So Krishna is saying, well, behind the lines, if you read between the lines, I may have run away from a battlefield before, almost about 100 years ago, but people build temples for me in future, but for you, there will only be criticism. So Arjuna, you be careful, because you are really a Kshatriya, so you have to be careful and fight. Otherwise, you will be criticized like anything. So in this way, Arjuna is being persuaded by Krishna to fight. We will stop here because it is time for darshan. And after darshan, we will stop for any questions, and then there will be prasadam. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.